One of the unique things about Ken Stabler is he walks in the huddle, your 6'3" lineman becomes 6'6".
To be in the huddle with him is so different than anything else you've ever seen.
Okay, in the huddle today, we got this naked quarterback, the kid from Alabama.
East full right. 99 in, two swing on one.
He had a command presence that every great quarterback has where you're going to lay your life down because this is our guy. This is our leader.
This has been Flanagan for AL.com in Tuscaloosa. By now, you've likely heard the news that former Alabama and NFL quarterback Kenny Stabler passed away Thursday, July 9th, due to complications from cancer. Nicknamed the Snake, Stabler was and remains a beloved and controversial figure in the sports world. A legend in Tuscaloosa as one of the school's most decorated players historically, a pure winner by all accounts at every level, a man who enjoyed life on and off the field, and a native of Foley, Alabama, whose larger-than-life personality left a lasting impact on most who knew him personally and from a distance. I wanted to get a firm grasp on the legacy Stabler leaves behind in Tuscaloosa at the University of Alabama, nationally, in college football, and the NFL, and personally to friends, colleagues, and fans through the eyes of those who knew him or studied his every move on the football field or in the broadcasting booth. I had conversations with six different men who knew Kenny Stabler in each of those different ways. His longtime broadcasting partner and voice of the Crimson Tide, Eli Gold, radio and television host Paul Feinbaum, his friend and national commentator Tim Brando, national college football writer Bruce Feldman, Alabama commentator and play-by-play man Chris Stewart, and Tuscaloosa radio host and opinion leader Ryan Fowler. From each of these men, you get a sense of the person Ken Stabler was, the positive effect he had on those he met, and the impact he had on the game of football. Some knew Stabler personally, while others admired his career like any fan would. But I want to start with Eli Gold, the man so many current Alabama fans associate with Stabler after their many memorable years calling Crimson Tide football games together. Then you'll hear Feinbaum, Stewart, Feldman, Fowler, and in perhaps the most personal conversation, Brando. We start with Eli Gold.
Eli Gold, we're hours removed from the news of the passing of Kenny Stabler, and obviously you had a significant relationship with him as a broadcaster and a friend, and I just wanted to ask you about sort of the lasting impact he'll obviously have on the Crimson Tide and that history and what it will mean to the fans. But I also wanted to ask what memories you currently have today as his friend and fellow broadcaster.
Well, you know, you're right. When you talk about a proud university like Alabama and start ticking off the great names, I mean, there are so many. But the first names that people always mention, you know, Joe Namath, Kenny Stabler, Bob Baumhauer, Dwight Stevenson, you know, Leroy Jordan. He's right there at the head of that list of immediately remembered people. So that right there is the significance that, you know, he brings to the university. He was one of the most successful, one of the all-time greats, and everybody knew him and liked him. And that's one of the things I saw firsthand traveling the country with Snake, going through the airports. It was like I was traveling with Paul McCartney or something. It was just remarkable. Everybody seemed to know him. It didn't matter where we were, whether they were wearing Alabama gear or if they were wearing LSU gear or if they were wearing Green Bay Packers stuff or if they were just wearing nondescript clothing. Everybody would come up, "You're Kenny Stabler, aren't you?" And Snake would never turn down a request for an autograph, never turn down a request for a picture, never turn down a request to be joined in a conversation. He loved people. People loved him. And that's what I, you know, his football knowledge, you know, we don't even have to discuss. That goes without saying, you know. The man's got Super Bowl rings. He's got championship rings. But he was just a man of the people. He loved mingling and shooting the breeze and signing autographs and posing for pictures and never asked for any money to do so, never made you feel insignificant. He was just a wonderful, wonderful guy.
Well, and you had obviously an intimate and unique knowledge of his capability as a broadcaster, as a color commentator. What do you think was unique about what he brought to the broadcast that you did together?
Well, what he brought that was unique to our broadcast is that he was the only guy on our broadcast who had ever taken a snap in, you know, under center in college or in the National Football League. He brought a Super Bowl ring and national championship rings. You know, I thought we made a good combination because I was the describer, but he was the been there and done that guy. And people don't realize how difficult it is to be a good color man on radio or a good color analyst. He looked at the game as you would expect a Super Bowl winning quarterback to do, or a national championship winning quarterback to do. He knew the insides, the depth of the situation. He had the old saying, he's forgotten more stuff than I'll ever know. Well, he knew all of this stuff, but he managed to say it so that those of us who never played the game could understand it. And he managed to do it in the, 11 or 12 seconds that he had before I had to start setting up for the next play. And that's not easy to do. And Snake was outstanding at doing that. So, he brought so much to the table. I mean, he brought who he was. He brought Kenny Stabler to the broadcast. But his knowledge of the game as a participant was something that I couldn't bring, that Tom Roberts couldn't bring, that, none of us could bring. So we really leaned on him for that element of the broadcast, and he was flawless. He was flawless. He was always prepared. He'd be diagramming plays. We'd be doing a first quarter, and I'd look over out of the corner of my eye, and he's diagramming a play on his legal pad that he carried with him. And then late in the game, he'd go back into that pad and he'd say, hey, remember now on that 3rd and 7 play in the first quarter, they did this, 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 because he had diagrammed the plays. The guy just loved the game. He lived football, and that's what he brought to the broadcasts.
And it's a hard question to answer when you go around and you travel and somebody says, what's it like playing for Coach Bryant? It's hard to explain that unless you've been around him and see the effect he has on people. We would play teams that were always bigger. We'd play teams, whether it be Tennessee, Auburn, Mississippi State, whoever. Play teams that were always bigger, always faster, always more of them, and we always won.
Paul Feinbaum, we've just heard this late-breaking news, and it has been confirmed that former Alabama quarterback and Oakland Raiders quarterback Kenny Stabler has indeed passed away. I just wanted to call and get your thoughts on the matter. Obviously, he's somebody who currently has a lasting legacy at the University of Alabama and in the NFL, but I just want to hear it from you. What now do you think moving forward Kenny Stabler will mean to Alabama football and Alabama football fans?
I think in many ways he's one of the most misunderstood players in the history of Alabama because of what happened perhaps after he left. But if you're looking and studying Alabama history, I think Kenny Stabler would be on the Mount Rushmore of great Alabama players and coaches, for that matter. If you put Bart Starr and Joe Namath, Kenny Stabler, to me, these are all players that deserve to be on that mountainside. And I think he's that important. I think what he stood for in terms of being a rebel has always been part of his legacy. I think it hurt him badly in relation to the NFL and the never-ending, I guess now-ending, controversy about whether he should be in the Hall of Fame. But in terms of Alabama football, I think he really comes pretty quickly after Joe Namath in terms of famous and great players.
Well, Paul, do you think, since you mentioned the Hall of Fame there, that he will or should be voted into the Hall?
Well, I've always felt like he deserved to be, and that was something that a lot of people argued about every year. I think Kenny hurt himself, and he could be like that. I got to know him over the years, not as well as many others who played with him or covered him, which I didn't. But you know, he just didn't care what anyone thought, and I think he ticked off a lot of people in the sports writing business who vote on these things, people that are easily ticked off and held things against him that had nothing to do with whether he should be in the Hall of Fame or not, which he should have been. I mean, that's not even a debate. But I think that hurt him. And I think now maybe there can be a movement to get him in. And I think it doesn't solve the issue of the fact that he deserved to be in and always should have been in, but it would still be a nice gesture after the fact.
You know, Kenny and I never compare statistics.
Our Super Bowls.
That way we can drink our Miller Lights without arguing. Right, Mr. Fewer career touchdown passes than me?
Right, Mr. Never been to the big one.
We only talk about why Miller Lite tastes great.
It's the choice hops.
No, Snake. Miller Lite tastes great because it's smooth. But let's not fight.
Yeah, you're right. Let's be friends.
Table ready for Mr. I don't have as many passing yards as Dan Fouts.
Hey, that's you.
Miller Lite. Taste the true Pilsner.
Chris Stewart with the Crimson Tide Sports Network. I just want to reach out to you because you obviously worked with Kenny Stabler directly, and we've obviously come upon this tragic news, this breaking news that Mr. Stabler has passed away. And I just wanted to ask, he obviously leaves an unbelievable legacy at the Capstone and with fans in Tuscaloosa and throughout the state and really throughout the country. But I want to hear from you. What do you think personally will be Kenny Stabler's lasting legacy at Alabama?
Ben, that's tough. I think, you know, obviously those that are fortunate enough to remember him as a player, those of us that have seen the highlights of his playing days at Alabama, you know what a great player he was. And then we got to know him as not only a great player, but a great character in the NFL. But I think for those of us that the opportunity and privileged enough to work with him, he was absolutely so much fun to be around. People gravitated to him. He enjoyed being around people and was so appreciative that people still remembered him and enjoyed his company. I think his legacy is going to really be not only one of the best players ever, but just one of the most popular people ever around the Alabama football program.
And again, you actually worked with him in your role in radio, and I just am curious, what will you remember about being around him personally and working in the same room with him? What did he bring to a broadcast that was unique?
Well, you know, I will say it. We got a chance to work with him not only with Alabama, but also I did a daily radio show with him for about a year. Mike Grace and I, the Sanford play-by-play, we did a daily talk show with him that was syndicated around the state for about a year. And from a ball game standpoint, you know, he brought the incredible perspective of having been there, but being able to see it from the booth about as well as he did from the pocket and explain it. And share that with the listener that whether you played the game or not, you had an understanding of what was going on, but you also really felt like you were getting insight from one of the greatest ever to play the game. You know, I guess from a radio show standpoint, it was the same type deal. He could give you the perspective of somebody who had actually done it and then speak to you in a way that everybody could understand. You didn't feel like you were being talked down to. You also didn't feel like it was being dumbed down for you. He just had an incredible way of communicating what he saw, and his perspective, was just so very unique because of his life experience. And I think being able to share that was something that made him very, very special.
Second down. Stabler rolling to the left. He's going to go. Oh, wins it in. Kenny Stabler, touchdown, Oakland. Stabler back to pass. A quick throw into the end zone. Casper, touchdown. Heifetz never played a violin with more dexterity than Kenny Stabler is playing the Minnesota Viking defense this afternoon in the Rose Bowl Stadium at Pasadena.
Bruce Feldman, reporter for Fox Sports and New York Times bestselling author of The QB, The Making of Modern Quarterbacks, We got the sad news Thursday evening of the passing of former Alabama and Oakland Raiders quarterback Ken Stabler, and there's definitely a clear sense here in Tuscaloosa about the impact that Stabler had and still has on the Alabama football program, its history, and its fans. But he seems to have left a substantial legacy to college football in general. How do you think that you personally and college football fans will remember Kenny Stabler?
You know, first and foremost, I would say as a great winner, you know, and it's sometimes we define, you know, starting pitchers by wins and losses. I mean, occasionally you'll see people still do that with quarterbacks, and he won big at Alabama as a starter. And then in the NFL, you know, when the Steelers had this great dynasty, I mean, you know, the Raiders were kind of, were a legitimate rival. And I think, you know, he had, he's one of these great characters who I feel like he's a character from like another, you know, he was from another era, you know, the stories of, you know, the wild partying and drinking and everything. And I think that he was one of these guys who was a larger than life figure. You know, I just remember, talking to Matt Millen, you know, a few years ago. We were both working on something, you know, we were both up at Michigan, and I spent kind of the afternoon with him, and we were just talking about a little bit about his days coming into the NFL as a Raider player and some of those glory teams and the larger than life figures that were on, you know, Al Davis's teams. And Stabler was kind of the ringleader of that. And I think when I saw that news, you know, my first thought is, you know, you go back to all those, you know, those fun NFL films and the super slow motion and the John Facenda comments and everything. And to me, that's part of an amazing legacy. And he's such a unique character in NFL folklore.
Well, you're someone who obviously has studied the position in pretty significant detail. Where do you see Stabler historically among the great quarterbacks at either the college or pro level? What impact do you think he left the position?
I think he was one of these guys who was just such a cool customer. I mean, one part of my book, I get into this brain typing where, you know, certain guys are looking for kind of that it factor for quarterbacks who not only can handle pressure, but thrive in it. And, you know, according to one of the experts I spoke to for the book, Ken Stabler was wired with a very specific rare brain type that, you know, many of the top Super Bowl winning quarterbacks had, and where they're at their best in under pressure situations. And maybe they're a little bit freewheeling in other aspects, but when it comes to handling pressure and responding to it, these guys are wired for it. And when I think of, you know, Ken Stabler, you know, I mean, to me, I know he's not in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, but that's surprising. And I think, you know, at some point, my guess is that'll get rectified. Because when you look at all he accomplished and all the big wins and everything else, I mean, he is, it's rare when you can call, you know, when I think of describing some of these guys, and even, you know, you think about this through Twitter, it's like, okay, you know, is it okay to call somebody like an all-time great or, you know, Alabama great or NFL great? And I think he is. And I think in a lot of ways, he's kind of a legendary figure because of, he was larger than life, larger than just the wins. He was a unique character, and a lot of times now, you know, guys can't be that way in pro sports, you know, just because I think they're limited. And the guys who are that way usually don't reach the level of success that Ken Stabler had.
Well, shortly after the Oakland Raiders confirmed his death, a press release revealed that Stabler will donate his brain and spinal cord for research with degenerative brain disease. What do you think that says about him and other former players who make that choice, and does that choice ever surprise you?
It doesn't anymore. It probably would have, you know, a few years ago. But I think it says that, you know, he had a conscience and he had a great awareness for players of his era and the toll that football has taken on a lot of their lives, you know. And I think, I don't know if I would, it's kind of an interesting footnote to a guy who you'd say, you know, lived every bit to the fullest. And I think, you know, that right to say it's like this is about him giving back, but I think this is about him thinking of the game and thinking about, of you know, generations going forward. And, you know, I've had a lot of respect for that from a guy who lived the way he did and put everything he did into you know, every moment, and then still kind of going forward to do that.
Stabler, there goes the end. Here's the block by Holman. There was a block by Mike Hall back there, too. Chatwood's block, and Stabler turned it on. I could watch that all night.
Ryan Fowler, host of The Game on 99.1 FM in Tuscaloosa. We, just a few hours ago, got word that Kenny Stabler, former Alabama and Oakland Raiders quarterback, has indeed passed away. It's tragic news, I know, for the Alabama fan base and for really college football and NFL fans in general. And you're somebody who has been very close to the program for a long time as a broadcaster, as a fan. I'm just wondering, how did this news hit you?
Well, you know, it's one of those things when you get the text message or you start getting word that Kenny Stabler has passed away, you're almost hoping that report that you got is not true. And as media, we do that sometimes. You know, you get stories and you're just like, oh, please, you know, don't let this happen. You look and you're hoping that at some point, you know, you're getting wrong information. You hope that it's not true. But when you look at Kenny Stabler, there's a lot of things that sticks out to me. For one, obviously being a legendary quarterback, but being a homegrown Alabama quarterback who was born in this state, grew up in this state, developed a love for Alabama football at an early age, to be able to accomplish what he was able to do in his pro career and to be able to do what he did at Alabama, it means something that he's an Alabama, you know, born quarterback that was able to have so much success and just certainly an icon, not just in the college ranks, but in the pro ranks as well. And when you think Kenny Stabler, you say that name and so many people recognize it. It certainly hits home, you know, in Tuscaloosa when you have to talk about Kenny Stabler and what he means to the Alabama fans.
And you think that is a legacy and an impact that lasts right now with the current fan base, even though he played so many years ago, he broadcast several years ago in the booth there with Eli. What kind of presence do you feel like Kenny Stabler still had even today during the Saban era?
Well, let me give you a great example. We have been doing throughout the summer Legends of Alabama Football, and we would take certain days and do certain positions where we would break down certain, you know, players. And Kenny Stabler was one of the players that was nominated as a quarterback. Now, sure, you had Joe Namath and Pat Trammell and A.J. McCarron as far as our quarterbacks that we talked about. 32 players went into this bracket. And as I was sort of lining it up, I figured the Nick Saban players would have more success than the older players just because of recent memory. You know, you remember more about the recent guys than you do that were in the 60s. Well, the final four was Kenny Stabler in that conversation. And I think that just shows you the popularity and the love that these Alabama fans have for him. Now, we're talking about Joe Namath is no longer in that final four. Now, we've suspended it because of the news today. We just put that off to the side. But Kenny Stabler went through this bracket where we took votes, you know, via our website. And that just shows you the love that Alabama fans have for Kenny Stabler. I was shocked. I understood it, but not to the magnitude that they were able to show me how much Kenny Stabler means to the Alabama fans.
Ryan, is there a moment or a play or a game specifically that sticks out to you as a broadcaster, a player while Stabler was alive that sticks out to you as something that has had a meaningful impact, whether it's on the fan base, on you as a spectator that you can recall, or something that you shared on your broadcast the night of the news that we heard Kenny Stabler's death?
Well, I think you got to go back to the famous, you know, run in the mud. We had Dennis Holman on, which made a really good block on that play that freed up Stabler. But you look at Alabama down 3-0, and the run in the mud in Legion Field in the late 60s to beat Auburn was one of those plays that I wasn't alive, but you don't have to be alive to embrace that play. You can go to YouTube and watch the plays. And when you watch the play, the thing that sticks out to me about Kenny Stabler is he was a mobile quarterback, but he was a quarterback that could also throw the football with high efficiency and just precise throwing ability. You look back, he's one of the most efficient quarterbacks in Alabama history. But the run in the mud, he was a dual threat quarterback really before dual threat quarterbacks were part of the conversation that we're having now in college football. Kenny Stabler might have been the first dual threat quarterback to play at such a high level, but I think it's the run in the mud. You know, down 3-0 at Auburn and the big play, the run in the mud, I think is the one that most people talk about. And I know Dennis Holman tonight on our program had a lot of great things to say about that play and, you know, how even Coach Bryant, if you go back and listen to his clip, he's speechless. As he's trying to describe that play, Coach Bryant really didn't say a lot. And he just says, wow, I could watch that play over and over and over. And that's coming from Coach Bryant, who watches the play. And it's eye-opening when you see that, the run in the mud from the late 60s against Auburn.
Kenny Stabler's famous run in the mud covered 53 yards, the longest tied run of the season. Good for a 7-3 victory.
Tim Brando, national sports commentator for Fox Sports. Anyone who follows you on Twitter or sees your timeline from Thursday evening can tell that Ken Stabler had a major impact on you personally. What is it about him that means so much to you as a broadcaster, a friend, and a fan of the game?
Well, you know, it's tough for any of us when we get to a stage in our lives when so many of the so-called bigger-than-life personalities and characters that we grew up to some extent watching and hoping one day we'd have a chance to meet. And then all of a sudden you do get to meet them, and they not only meet your expectations, but maybe surpass your expectations. And then all of a sudden, you know, you find out that, you know, time marches on and they may not be around. They may leave you suddenly. You know, Kenny was sick. We knew he was sick. But for those of us that weren't as close to him in recent months, we didn't know how sick. And so it was startling news when it happened. And then because when it first hit, then there was a retraction. We weren't really sure if it had happened or hadn't. And so there was kind of that lamenting over his passing, and, oh, maybe it's wrong, maybe he's okay. Then all of a sudden, yeah, the confirmation came. So it was a difficult afternoon, without a doubt. But I knew Kenny on, you know, a lot of different levels. Like other players of his generation, many of whom I got to know and sometimes work with, like an Archie Manning, by example, who happened to be the Saints quarterback when Kenny came in 1982 to replace him, in essence, because Archie was later traded to the Oilers for Leon Gray. I'm dear friends with Archie. I was dear friends with Kenny. And interestingly, they remain friends through the years, too, even though they played the same position and were in an awkward situation in New Orleans in 82. I was a young broadcaster working in New Orleans on WGSO radio. I was 25, 26 years old at the time, and got to know all of the Saints players back in those days. I went to Vero Beach for training camps from 1980 through 85. And that 82 year when Bum came back after taking over the team in 81, and he brought Stabler in, you know, Alabama quarterback coming in at the end of his career. Bum had had him in Houston and was comfortable with him, with what they were doing. And Archie seemed to be maybe an outlier in Bum's approach to the game. So maybe they were going to try to bolster their offensive line and begin anew. And Archie would wind up being traded first to ironically, it was the Oilers, and then he wound up in Minnesota when he closed out his career. But I was there covering the Saints on a regular basis. And when Stabler came in and became the starting quarterback, I actually did a 15-minute weekly Kenny Stabler radio show with him that I would tape on the Saints team charter coming back from road games. Some of those interviews were shall we say, more brief than others, depending upon how many sacks he had been part of in that particular game. But he was always so cordial and understood what I was trying to do, and like a lot of guys from that era, you know, they just made you feel like you were special, and they didn't have to. You know, guys of that generation were tough guys, and yeah, there were times they didn't want to be bothered by the media, but they were also very cordial and made, if you worked hard, they appreciated the fact that you worked hard and made you feel like you were somebody that was important to them. Stabler had that quality, and I don't think, especially by comparison to others from his generation, he doesn't get nationally a fair shake on that. I think in large measure because of the Raider renegade impressions, and clearly he had some issues from time to time off the field that were well documented. We all have our flaws, but Kenny, in terms of the way he treated the people that he came into contact with, he was just a genuine article. He was very giving of his time. I never saw him turn to an autograph opportunity. Whenever there were kids around, he was magnificent. I even got to know and work with some of his former players in the mid-90s. I did those early games in the SEC that people remember in Alabama, the Jefferson Pilot games. I worked with Dave Rowe, who was a huge, enormous nose tackle on that 76 team that went on to beat the Vikings in the Super Bowl. And Dave Rowe talked about Stabler in much the same vein as I saw Bob Baumhauer speaking of him in his quotes today. He just loved him. You know, Stabler was the kind of guy who would walk into the room, take care of his offensive linemen. He made sure he bought them all dinner. If there were parents or family members of teammates that were coming in for big games for the Raiders, and they happened to be in the room, Snake would make it all the way around to each one of those tables, talk to the players and talk to the players' families. You know, Dave told me about that as a teammate. He absolutely put Snake on a huge pedestal. And that's one of the reasons why the Raiders were who they were and why he was one of the great leaders of the teams that he quarterbacked, whether it was at Alabama or for the Raiders or the Saints or the Houston Oilers. That's just the way Kenny Stabler was. So I got to know him on that level professionally. And then later in life, post-football, as my career emerged at ESPN, you know, he started a celebrity golf tournament in Point Clear to raise money for the children's hospitals in Alabama, Ronald McDonald House and all that. He reached out to me to become a part of his celebrity corps coming in. And I was just beginning to play golf at that time. This is like 89, 90, 91, right in there. And he flew me in from Connecticut, treated me like a rock star. And I brought in my family. My youngest was an infant at the time. And I've still got videos of it. And just treated me with such tremendous respect and made me feel like I was extra special then. And I never missed his tournament. I think I may have missed one year. Something came up with my family that I couldn't make it. I can't remember now what it was, but for 14 or 15 years, it was Mother's Day. I always had it on Mother's Day weekend. And my wife and I would just make it, that was just circled. Calendar was circled. We were going to come. And his daughters, Alexa and Marissa, were somewhere between my oldest daughter's age and my baby was an infant, obviously, and they made over them, and we got to know them. You know, we just got to know the family, and his wife at the time, Rose, was a young broadcaster, was doing weather, and so we just became good friends with them, and I even got to know his oldest daughter, Kendra, pretty well during that period, too. So both personally and professionally, I really valued my relationship with Kenny.
Well, what kind of lasting impact do you currently see Stabler having on today's game? What do you feel like he has left college football that you see today?
Well, I mean, his ability to make plays. He was just the ultimate playmaker. You know, Kenny Stabler was, you know, no one's ever going to say he was as elusive as Roger Staubach or Steve Young. But when he had to make plays, or Archie Manning for that matter, but when he had to make plays, he did. You know, some of his biggest plays, biggest moments were with his legs. He made huge plays at Alabama with his legs, and he did kind of the same thing with the Raiders. That play against the Dolphins that I know Baumhauer remembers so well. I mean, you know, who makes that pass? Who completes it to win the game? You know, other than Kenny Stabler. I mean, he was just incredible in the way that he did that. And that was a Dolphins team, frankly, that probably thought they were going to win the championship again that year, and the Raiders took it away from them. But in college, it was the same thing. I mean, I remember watching him as a young man, and that's kind of the thing for me, too, is when you're young, you know, you want to be a sportscaster. You're watching guys play, and you're, say, 9, 10, 11 years old, and they're 18, 19, 20. Kenny's 10 years older than me, so when he was playing in college, I was about 11 or 12. That's a very influential time to be watching games when you know you want to one day broadcast games and hopefully get to meet some of these guys. And that's what I think I remember most was that Stabler, and I'm a left-hander too, so I loved lefties. I think all left-handers, when they watch a guy, he was the first great, for me anyway, first great left-handed quarterback. And as a southpaw, I just had an affinity for watching him play. You know, there's I remember Snake saying to me once in that great dialect of his, you know, Timmy, you know, they never called a right-handed crafty, you know. And I use that line from time to time now. When somebody will say to me on the golf course, you stand on the wrong side of the ball. And I'll say, well, you know what? They never called a right-hander crafty, did they? You know, I'll use that line. It still resonates with people. But, yeah, toughness, playmaking ability, and probably undervalued for his escapability and his great plays made with his legs. I mean, you go back, people forget this, but in the game when Bradshaw's passed, the incredible pass that Franco Harris allegedly caught, and the Steelers beat the Raiders to advance in the playoffs. I want to say that was in 72. I'm a sophomore in high school at that time. If that pass is not completed, the game is won on an incredible run made by Kenny Stabler. So, I mean, and so many of those plays that he made with Madden and the Raiders in those days were very similar to what he did for Barrett in Alabama.
Well, I spoke with his former broadcasting partner, Eli Gold, earlier this evening, and he sung his praises, obviously, as a broadcaster. And you, as a veteran broadcaster and sportscaster, obviously see it every day that the transition from being an athlete to being a commentator is not necessarily an easy one. And Kenny seemed to have a real natural ability. Is that something that you admired about him later in his career?
Yeah, well, I would come in there during those days when he started, when he was doing the games with Eli. I was broadcasting some games, came in from time to time, both when I was doing those games, as I mentioned, with Jefferson Pilot, and then later with CBS. And, yeah, I mean, he put everybody at ease. I think people also understood where Kenny was coming from. He didn't have to say a lot for people to understand where he was coming from. He knew who his audience was, and his audience adored him. So he played to that, and it made it, I think, a really, really easy listen. And Eli being the, in his own way, a bigger-than-life personality himself, they just blended together, you know, really, really well. And I remember, people forget this too about Kenny, but, you know, in his earliest days out of broadcasting, he actually did some games with CBS. He was doing some regional NFL games with CBS, and he was paired with my friend Greg Gumbel. And I remember Greg talking to me about how laid back and easygoing Snake was and how much fun they had. I said, God, that must have been incredible, Greg, to be with Kenny Stabler. He said, well, let's just say it didn't matter how wired or how worried the producer was, our crew was going to have a good time because Kenny was there, you know. I think that his personality and his approach to life made him a natural in making everybody feel comfortable that he worked with when he was in broadcasting. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
Well, and so there's obviously this question about the Hall of Fame that his fans are just ardently passionate about. Is that something that you see, his induction, happening in the future? Will it happen and should it happen?
Well, it's long overdue for happening. Whether it will, I really don't know. I do some NFL games. I know a number of people that are part of the National Football League, and I have great respect for many of the media types that have been following it for a far longer period of time than myself. But that said, I think there are times when we really get too caught up in images and impressions. And I think that for whatever reason, and there may have been a few times when, because of the generation that Stabler came from, because of maybe some of the things that had been written or said, maybe even some things that Kenny did when he was younger or said when he was younger, that alienated some of the elite media from the NFL of that generation. You know, I scoff when I think about those transgressions from that era being considered the kind of transgressions that would cost you a chance to be in the Hall of Fame, given what we see with the modern day internet athlete and the issues that they have, and yet may get in on the first or second ballot. I mean, I realize that he only has the one Super Bowl. I realize that that there were some issues with regard to what happened to him off the field and even later in life, to some extent off the field. But that should absolutely, in my mind, have no bearing on what he did on the field and the way he treated people, by and large, that he came in contact with, whether they were teammates or they were the competitors, the guys that he played against, his peer group. You hear what Bob Baumhauer said and other players when they're sacking a quarterback and he's getting up after a sixth or seventh time and he's cracking jokes with him and he's being a man about it. You know, a man's man in his approach to the game. To me, that supersedes any or all past issues that some people that are in a position to vote and get him through the Veterans Committee, perhaps posthumously in the Hall of Fame, that should supersede it. It really should. And I would hope that they do it sooner rather than later.
Well, Tim Brando, thank you very much, and I'm sorry for the loss of your friend.
Oh, thanks. Thoughts and prayers are with all of his family, his extended family, and certainly his immediate family, the girls, Kendra, Alexa, and Marissa.
My thanks to all who participated: Eli Gold, Paul Feinbaum, Chris Stewart, Bruce Feldman, Ryan Fowler, and Tim Brando. This is Ben Flanagan reporting for AL.com in Tuscaloosa.
I want to share some things with you that Coach Bryant used to say to us before big games. First of all, respect your opponent, which we do. We respect your opponent. Win the right way, lose the right way if you have to. We win together, we lose together. We play together, we stay together. Do it all with the same old Alabama class that we always